This episode of Dev Talk with Rich and Vin follows a slightly different format. On this podcast, we get up close and personal with Digi International CEO Ron Konezny.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Dev Talk with Rich and Vin. I'm Rich and you're Vin. How you doing, Vin?
Good. How are you, Rich?
I'm doing good. Just back from Embedded World. What a great show it was. They said there were 32,000 people there.
Wow. I didn't know there were that many of us.
Well, I don't believe the number, but it depends how you make the number, because I'm sure that includes all, I shouldn't say sure. I believe that includes all the exhibitors as well. And there were 1,100 visitors. And if you take an average, I don't know, 5, 6, 10 people per exhibitor, you're at, let's see, do the math there, 11,000 people right there. Did I do that right? Yeah. So anyway, but it was a really good show. Monday was good. Tuesday was great. I'm sorry, I'm doing this wrong. Tuesday was good. Wednesday was great. And Thursday was slow. But that's to be expected. It was a really good show. The technology we saw was top notch. And everybody wants to talk about AI and Wi-Fi 6 and security and all that stuff. So that was my week. And cool. You have been MIA. What's going on?
Oh, there's been so much craziness going on in my life. I'm actually preparing to conduct my first wedding this weekend. My wife's nephew's getting married in Arkansas, and I got ordained, and I'm going to be performing the wedding. And they want it to be funny and more secular, so it's going to be really great. We're doing a reading from Dr. Seuss and a whole bunch of other things. So I've been prepping for that in my personal life and in my business life. I've been working on building out this course we were talking about and doing a bunch of stuff for a couple of clients in the area of technology adoption and technology value proposition work, which, you know, is the stuff that I do when I'm not teaching. And it's been really exciting. I think we released 5 videos in the last 2 weeks for a client. So we've been hopping.
Well, I can tell by the way your office looks behind you that you've been quite busy, because it's still quite the mess. I'm sure Gail is not happy with you.
I was building circuit boards last night until midnight. So
there you go. So back to Embedded World. One of the exhibitors that I happened to meet with at Embedded World was Digi International. And it dawned on me that we have not had Ron Konezny as a guest on our podcast. So I said, hey, Ron, want to be a guest on our podcast? And he said, well, what's involved? And I lied. I told him it was easy. And we would just ask him some simple questions. And he said, sure, I'll come on. So Ron agrees to join. Hey, how you doing, Ron?
You fooled me, guys. I'm here.
Welcome, Ron. It'll be easy.
First off, what was your take on Embedded World?
So Embedded World was great, but really back to the pre-COVID days where you had a lot of activity, a lot of exhibitors, and it's just a one-of-a-kind experience to be able to meet so many customers and prospects, quite frankly, evaluate your competition, and of course, be aware of any new trends that are coming out.
When are we going to stop using the COVID reference? How many years have to pass before we stop talking about that?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess we're not talking about the eclipse anymore, are we?
No.
You know, I got a buddy who is a fairly big wig in the embedded space, and he stayed home until Monday night and flew out Monday night to go to Embedded World because he wanted to see the eclipse. I don't know. Was it that big of a deal? Ben, you're right in the path of the eclipse, right?
Well, not in the 100%. We were at like 70% here, and it got a little dark, but honestly, we had cloud cover, so we couldn't see too much. We got a couple of good shots with our phones, but it was such a craze that by the time we got close enough to think about it, because we had busy lives, we couldn't get glasses anywhere. So we didn't actually look directly at it with glasses. So we took upside down pictures with our phones and looked at it that way. So it was interesting. I had a couple of friends who were in the direct path, and they said that that it was incredibly emotional for them, but they are in my group of crunchy friends, so it's hard to really gauge it right on some absolute scale.
You know, Rich, you mentioned Dr. Seuss while this is going on.
No. I mean, you know, I have groups of friends and some are, you know, engineers and very left brained and some are very right brained and some are very emotional and, you know, sort of the crunchy crowd. And it's interesting when they all mix together and what that looks like. But definitely, I mean, I know some people who drove all the way to Burlington. I know people who flew in to places and I'm like, okay. Okay.
No, Rich, you mentioned the days of the conference. How many times in that third day is it the best day, right? By then people are worn out, they're doing something personal
Absolutely. And it's generally students' day. And I think because it was later this year, there weren't that many students because they're not on spring break or whatever it is, or they are on spring break. And it ends at 5 o'clock on the last day. And by like 3:30, people are ripping the booze apart, which is the norm. Everybody wants to get in there. So anyway, back to you, Ron. You've been at Digi how long?
A little over 9 years.
And you started as a what? In the mailroom?
Sorry, say that again?
In the mailroom?
Yeah, exactly. I started assisting the CEO and then I got rid of him so I could become a CEO. Yeah.
Well, your name doesn't end in a vowel. Yeah. So it's...
No, so I actually, you know, prior to Digi, I actually started in management consulting and worked with telco and computer-based firms. Back then, those industries were even more separate than they are today. And I was working for larger companies, suggesting, advising, recommending. And then the pendulum went 180 degrees for me to starting a company. So I started a company in fleet management. So built an onboard computer that went into trucks and connected them to their dispatch using primarily cellular as the way to communicate. And we were one of the first to combine GPS, cellular, and the internet back in the mid-90s. That was very novel. Netscape went public in 95. And of course, now we got buried in our pockets and our phones. But back then, it was very novel. We'd go to these truckers and we'd say, hey, we got this brand new fleet management system. It uses the internet. And these truckers would be like, what's the internet? And how do I get on it? So those were back in the 14.4K dial-up modem era. And so our user interface was extremely crude, right? You know, because we had to be so precious with those bits that are traveling back and forth. But anyways, long story short, grew that company, sold it to Trimble Navigation in 2011 and was a GM there for a while and got the itch to be back in the chair. Like us, you know, troubled CEOs, we can't possibly report to anybody. So I joined Digi about a little over nine years ago as their CEO.
So you've been the CEO for 9 years.
That's right, which is how many years in tech world, right? With the pace of change. I mean, it's got to be at least double that in tech years.
Well, you're not in Silicon Valley, but I measure Silicon Valley years different than every place
else
in
the country. Yeah, that's even different.
100%.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So are you a tech guy or are you a business guy?
So it's interesting. This is going to be a just disappointing answer, but I'm a little bit of both. I started off really, really liking sports.
Why would that be disappointing?
Well. So you know, adaptable is always a little bit of like I can't nail you down. But I started off in sports, and I you know grew up like a lot of young kids. Like I'm going to be a professional. You know, baseball, football, basketball. And back when I grew up, if you did computers and you did sports, that was like, you know, you're violating a religious or political doctrine because your sports buddies would call you brain. And of course, your brain people are like, why are you hanging out with those jocks? So I would code in BASIC back in those days. But I'd do it on the side and didn't want anybody to know because I didn't want to risk my reputation as a crappy athlete. But
oh, my God, a closet programmer.
Yeah. So I've always had an affinity for programming and math. My dad was an accountant So I'm probably at my age now, technically aware, but not competent. But I'm dangerous enough to know how things work. And when I was in consulting, I fell in love with wireless communications. I'm like, how sometimes you have an epiphany, you have no idea where it came from. Like, we're going to be sending data over wireless. We're not going to be using it for voice. And that's kind of fell in my love affair. We're starting this company. Back then, we were doing circuit switched wireless data. So we were connecting 1200 baud modems because back in those days you paid by the minute for cellular. So you had to get that training time down as low as possible. And we were twiddling bits and just losing the difference from the last GPS point to reduce the amount of data so we could get all that data sent in that first minute and tear it down. I feel like a Russian programmer at that point. But
to be clear, you started Digi?
Yeah. No, I started PeopleNet, the successor. Digi's been around since 1985 when public.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Yep. So Digi's been around for almost 40 years. And Digi, real quickly, its original product was something called the Digi Board. And I don't know if you're aware of that, but back in the 80s, personal computers were just coming on, and a lot of the establishments were like, hey, why would we want these personal computers? They're just big calculators. They can't really do much. And Digi said, you know what? We're going to need to interconnect these computers and want to remotely access them. And the Digi Board was born. Now, that was a serial card that you could put in a Sun Microsystem and an IBM DOS, a Microsoft Windows, but you could network these different computers. And so the company was born with this machine-to-machine connectivity, albeit PCs and mini PCs. And then the company went public off of that in 1989. And within 2 years had this existential crisis because, of course, the Ethernet standard, you know, really succeeded serial as a way to interconnect computers. And so the company had a lot of money from selling tons of Digi boards and going public. So it went on different acquisition sprees. And in the 90s, if you looked at kind of the era chart, you'd see a lot of choppiness, different CEOs, different ways to make Digi great, and different acquisitions all over the world. And then my predecessor joined in 1999, and he came from 3Com, where his biggest claim to fame was the 56K modem. And he joined, and he's a product management type person, and he joined and was able to stabilize the company, grow the company. Then he stalled out, and that led into my era. And my era has been the solution era. We've got a great history.
When you say he stalled out, you had him offed?
Well, I wasn't there. So the board at the time, you know, prematurely retired him. One of the challenges.
Nice way to say that.
Yeah. One of the challenges that at the end of that person's era, the biggest initiative / challenge was buying a Salesforce implementation firm to help usher in the age of the social machine. And so the strategy was, we're going to have these machines talk to Salesforce, in particular their Service Cloud, which is their customer service software, and they're going to tell the Service Cloud how they felt. I'm feeling fine. I need help. I need a software update. I need someone to come and repair me. And we would usher in the day of proactive care. And there were, it was very sexy. I don't know if you've ever been to the Salesforce headquarters. I had the honor to drink a bunch of their Kool-Aid. I mean, it's probably the best marketing firm on the planet. And, you know, you got people who are, you know, young people in skateboards and dogs and drinking fancy coffee. And you get there and they're like, hey, Ron, you're behind. I said, what are you talking about? Well, you need to sell, you know, X million dollars of annual contract value of Salesforce licenses. And I'm like, what are you talking about? But they rely heavily on their partner network to sell their software. It's one of their greatest marketing achievements, is getting others to sell their stuff. But what happened was, we got a lot of meetings. This is back again in the 2012, 2013, 2014 timeframe. A lot of meetings at C levels, because the age of IoT was just really gaining momentum. And we had tons of meetings, a few pilots, but $0. And like anything, the devil's in the details. You know, you might have, let's say, Icon Fitness, who makes treadmills and bikes, using Salesforce to help manage their CRM and their customer service group. Well, they rely heavily on distributors that then sell to health clubs and private country clubs, except whoever's got a gym, hotels, right? So, but those people aren't using Salesforce, let alone the Service Cloud. So in the data coming from a treadmill, Icon Fitness really has to send that to their dealer, who then needs to go service that. So you have that age-old problem of, you know, where's the value lie and who gets the benefit, who's paying and who's actually benefiting. But long story short, that really, they had bet big on this company they acquired and was going to transform the company, but that strategy did not succeed. And that led to me joining the company. Digi's had, you know, wonderful history of providing very reliable, rugged, long-lasting, high-performing hardware. But as you know, companies that make hardware, especially in the Western markets, aren't nearly as valuable. They're still very valuable on Eastern markets, but not so much on Western markets. And so my big push with Digi is to leverage that strength and those relationships, but provide more of the solution, provide the wireless connectivity, provide the cloud, provide 24/7 care. And the kind of tongue-in-cheek, modus operandi or call for action is, You know, gone are the days that you can set it and forget it. There was a time where you could buy something, put it in place, and it would work forever. You didn't have to worry about it. Now,
well, that's the whole mantra for embedded. That's what embedded is.
Right. Right. Now you have to actively manage your solution. You can't just sign off. There's too many regulatory issues. There's too much change in security. And there's too much change in technology and business opportunities and challenges that you have to have a ways to actively, you know, you guys are all as experienced as I am. There was a day when you couldn't remotely access software and update it. Now you can, you have a living, breathing piece of technology out there. We can't remotely download hardware yet, but we certainly can update firmware and add capabilities and fix bugs. And that's a tremendous value, right? And that allows
you to update hardware.
Well, remotely. You can't do it remotely. Can't do it remotely.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. Still that's an in-person thing for now, you know?
Okay. So what is the most successful product for Digi in the year 2030?
You know, I think it's going to be, and I say this, you know, both as a joke, but for real, is I think that as AI emerges and gets past this, I call it, you know, this large language models where it's very processor, energy, data intensive. I think what'll happen is it'll have children, and these will be small language models. And these will be AI at the edge, because the edge can't possibly need or consume all of the world's information to come up with, you know, the latest recipe on how to make penne pasta, right? But let's say you've got a device attached to an elevator. It really cares about how elevators work, and it wants to know as much as it can about maybe even that maker model. It could greatly benefit from having access to this small language model that ushers in the day of, if you will, AI on the edge. But it's a much different version than we understand today. It's more machine oriented. It's much more specific. It ushers in the day of, you know, very, very predictive about performance and uptime. And one of our customers is Otis Elevator. And, you know, we provide technology inside of every elevator to provide emergency voice service, but also to connect to the motherboard inside that elevator to update its software, understand performance information and fault codes, number one, to increase uptime. But number two is if there is a problem, which is hard to avoid, you send one person out there one time with the right skills, parts, and tools to get that job done, because you've got enough information to solve that problem.
What do you think of that answer, Vin? You know a lot more about AI than I do.
You know, I think that properly implemented, that's actually the goal and the holy grail, right? Is that it's not going to fix itself necessarily, but to be able to dispatch once because you have enough information. Historically, we've on average dispatched, you know, for most major things like air conditioners, elevators, you know, large industrial equipment, two and a half times, because you get out there and then you diagnose and then you get parts out. And then sometimes when you get out, you find out that the part that was sent was for a different rev machine. And so you can fix some things, but not all. And so having more information about the state of the machine, when it was made, and, you know, other industries have done this manually for years. If you look at the VIN number for cars, right, you can tell immediately what rev a car is in terms of spare parts and everything like that, so that when you go on a site to that's an official site to order a you know, a car kit to add I don't know, Apple CarPlay to your 2014 BMW or something, it says what's the VIN number, and it says, oh, this is a late model, it uses our model 23 instead of our model 22 kit, and what you get is right from the beginning. And other things that are historically managed by, you know, quote unquote professionals, that is people who've been trained to work on the elevator or trained to work on your HVAC or whatever, they're expected to go out and first to diagnose. And, you know, if you remember the days of the old Sears model of sending a service person out, they came out in a van and they had multiple boards and things in there, and they would go out to the truck and say, I need one of these and two of these, and go back in and fix it. But that was when there were two different models to choose from. Now, both because people want more choice and companies want to cover more bases, there are hundreds of models, and there's no way to scale what I call the mobile inventory to be able to do that. And so knowing everything that there is to know about something before you go out and do something to it increases your chance of fixing it right the first time, right? And that's for things that you can't do remotely by just changing a setting, which you can do over the connectivity now, right?
All right, we're just about out of time here. So I have a question for Ron. I asked this question to lots of people. What's the thing that they didn't teach you in college that they should have?
Oh boy, what they didn't teach you in college they should have. Oh boy, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. I think honestly what I learned, probably not from college, but I think is incredibly valuable, is, and I tell this to a lot of young people that I meet with, is don't chase money. Chase your passion, what you like to do, and try to match that with what you're good at, and the money will work itself out. If you can get those two, whatever it may be, don't do it for money. It never works out well if you do it just for money or fame or whatever. Do it what you're good at and what you like, and everything else will work out.
So have that baseball career work out for you.
Well, if you know, like I coached my daughter's fast pitch softball team.
There you go.
Very good. Very good. Well, thanks, Ron. I certainly appreciate you spending some time with Vin and I on Dev Talk with Rich and Vin.